problem who need more information, and to have one place for all of that information.
Yeah, and I think that's amazingly valuable. I think at this point we don't know what's important, so you really can't say, well, I'm going to collect this information but not that.
Right.
Alejandro, we actually need to take a break. I can't believe we've gone through an entire hour already. I've had so much fun talking with you. But we do need to take just a couple minutes of break. And don't go too far, anybody, because we will be right back. You're listening to Through the Keyhole on Paranormal Radio Network and UPRN 105.8 FM in New Orleans. I'm your host, Karen Dolan. My guest today is Alejandro Rojas of the Mutual UFO Network. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network and on UPRN 105.8 FM in New Orleans. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and my guest today is Alejandro Rojas with the Mutual UFO Network. We were having a nice little chat on the break, so there are a couple of things I just wanted to mention again. Before we went to break, we were talking about the organization of MUFON and some of the things people expect the organization to do, and also how that varies from what they actually do, which I thought was kind of neat. But we were talking about day jobs over the break, and I just wanted to mention one more time, because I think this is a fact that bears repeating. A lot of people who probably listen to the show and are not researchers themselves don't realize that UFO researchers don't get paid to do this. And people who work for MUFON, and Alejandro, you're the director of public education for MUFON, and this is still a volunteer position, is it not?
Yeah, it is a volunteer position, so no money comes my way.
So, see, when we go to conferences, and when you listeners come to conferences, and you see speakers like, you see Alejandro, and you see people like my husband, who are selling books and they're selling DVDs, buy them, please.
Yeah, many. Hand them out to your friends.
You know, I know, and I hear people all the time who are saying, oh, you know, they're just doing this for the money. You know what? There's no money in it. What
you know, that's
doing,
incredible, too.
I am just so blown away by it. What they're doing is trying to cover expenses, because, you know, the people who put on these conferences are absolutely amazing, all of them. They bend over backward to make the weekend an amazing, wonderful experience for the attendees and for the speakers. And I can't begin to tell you, you know, how absolutely incredible some of these organizers have been to us, and some of the things I've seen them do. They're just, now I'm probably bringing up all kinds of weird pictures in people's heads, but they really have been willing to go above and beyond the call of duty, you know, to help us.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Make everything really nice for us.
Yeah, Roswell is an example. I mean,
that
was one where people actually got paid. And I love that, because I'm going to save it, and I think I'm going to frame it, my check from the city of Roswell. And they even have little UFOs on their check.
Yeah,
that was
really
fun.
Cool. You know, the first time I ever got paid to speak any place was in Roswell.
Yeah. Oh, neat.
Not this year, but last year at the 60th anniversary was the first time I ever spoke in public, and I got paid for it, and it was just way cool.
Cool.
And then they lose money on this frequently.
Right. And even with Roswell.
Yeah, it's not.
You see a lot on these shows.
Huge amounts of money on these things, and
you
know, they pay everything they can. They pay a lot of expenses for bringing all these speakers in, but then the speakers still, you know, when we go home, we still have to pay the rent and the mortgage and, you know, the kids' braces and all these things.
That's a funny thing that you see on TV a lot, on almost all of the Roswell shows, documentaries about Roswell. At the end, they're talking about, well, what are the motivations for the Roswell legend or myth to continue? And their number one motivation they usually go to is that people are making tons of money off of Roswell. These researchers are selling their books, and everybody's making all this money off of Roswell. Little do they know, lots of times these people pay more to print their books than they make off of their books,
yes.
And that their books, like you said, cover expenses when it comes around. It comes to being able to do their research.
Absolutely. I mean, if your book does well, that means you don't have to work 80 hours a week to pay all your regular bills. It means you have a little
right.
bit of free time to spend on research.
Right.
And, you know, maybe you can buy a plane ticket to attend a conference sometime.
Uh-huh.
And maybe you can buy a couple of these books. You know?
Right. Research can be very expensive, especially
yeah.
when traveling or paying for people to travel, equipment or getting interviews. I mean, really, this is where my hobby money goes. A lot of people buy motorcycles or cars or other things,
right.
but I'm sure the same is true of both of you, that my money
yeah.
goes into, okay, I'm going to bring in this speaker to do a lecture so I can meet him and interview him, or, you know, goes to things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Mine
buying
has
books.
Always, I mean, for years, mine was, if I have any extra money, I'm saving it up for a plane ticket so I can go to a conference with Rich. Because
right.
if he's speaking, they'll pay for his expenses, but not mine. If I want to go, I pay mine.
Yeah.
So I'm just really psyched that now I get invited to speak, too, because, you know, now I can actually afford to go places.
Yeah, which is perfect. That's great.
Yeah. And, it, you know, and I love going to the conferences because, for one thing, you get to spend 3 days minimum with people who don't think you're crazy.
Yeah.
Which is really nice. And a lot of these people, I'm just amazed at how brilliant they are. You know, you sit
yeah,
down in a room,
mm-hmm.
oh, my God, you sit down with all the speakers just kind of hanging out at dinner or something, and you get Jim Mars and Linda Moulton Howe and Stan Friedman and Rich and all these people at one table, and they just start bouncing stuff off each other.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's like my most favorite place in the world to be, just sit there listening to them, just talking.
Yeah. Yeah, being in this field, I've met some of the nicest and most intelligent people I've ever met. It does, you know, and I feel so incredibly honored to be part of MUFON and the board members. We have Bob Wood, who's done just incredible stuff through his lifetime in this field, personally, and John Schuessler and Robert Switek and Tom Dooley and Tom Whitmore, and to be able to, and Chuck Reaver, our director of investigations, and Robert Powell, our director of research, Ron Rieger, all of these people who are speakers occasionally themselves, but have done just some incredible work. I mean, these people have worked with NASA, with NSA, with police departments and law enforcement, and to be able to be a part of these conversations. These people, to me, who have made history and are historic, is such an incredible privilege. And then James Carrion is extremely inspiring. I know people were like, who the heck is this guy, when he became
yeah.
our director, because he wasn't really known in the UFO circles. But if you get to talk to him, he is very intelligent, very level-headed. He's incredible. He knows Spanish and Russian. And
I remember finding out that he spoke Russian, and I was just blown
yeah.
away. I thought, oh, my God. You know, I mean, you have to be really, really smart to go from
yes.
English to Russian. That's
Those are different.
Not,
They're
yeah,
not both Latin-based
It's not
based
like saying, well, if
languages.
You know French, you can learn Spanish. I mean, these are two very, very different languages. And I think that threw a lot of people off. They're saying, well, if he speaks
right.
Russian, what is he, counterintelligence, or what's the deal here?
Well, and he does, that was his background. He did Air Force intelligence work,
yeah.
listening
so then,
to conversations between Cuba and Russia.
Oh, boy. So, of course, that threw a lot of people off, too, because in the UFO
yeah.
field, we're all predisposed, you know, our backs go up when we hear about intelligence and counterintelligence.
Right.
About why? What are you doing here?
Especially Air Force intelligence, because
yeah.
There's been a history there. Yeah, these people, it's incredible to be able to hang out and listen with them, but then, of course, all the other speakers. I was excited to meet your husband when he came to speak for us at a MUFON symposium, but I was extremely delighted, and in fact, one of my favorite conversations was with you when I came to the table, and he wasn't there, but I got to strike up a conversation with you, and we ended up talking for quite some time, and I was so happy with that, because it was just a great conversation, and I was really excited to have met you, and that was a lot of fun.
Well, I really enjoyed that, too, and I wow, thanks. That's so sweet. I had just the best time in Roswell. I mean, you know what was really cool is a lot of people who were friends on MySpace, but they use these little nicknames and things.
Yeah.
People would come up and say, oh, I'm this person, I'm that person, and they'd give me their nickname. And I'm like, oh,
that's
you.
Funny.
Okay, you're a real
person.
Yeah. Cool.
That is really funny. Yeah, I get surprised at just, you know, when people start to get to know you, it's so incredibly flattering. And the best one was this weekend. Pat, he's the younger of the three on the UFO Hunter show. There's Bill Burns, of course, the main guy.
I still haven't seen the History Channel one. I saw the Sci-Fi
Channel one. Oh, you haven't?
Mm-hmm. Somebody taped the Sci-Fi Channel one for me. But we don't have cable. We have kids growing up, and we don't have cable at all. So I kind of have to wait until they're on DVD or if somebody makes a tape or something, then I can see it.
Yeah. They'll have to get on DVD.
I've heard really good things about it.
They are neat, you know. I think they are really cool. And luckily, they work with MUFON a lot. So we've had James and John Schuessler on. Ruben Uriarte was on. Victor Camacho.
Sam Maranto was on one too, right?
Sam Maranto. I think he's got one coming up. They're real excited about that one. It's one coming up in the next couple of months here. But we work closely with them, you know, on, and they use a lot of MUFON stories and our guys to help them go shoot these things, which is wonderful. It's great to have that kind of relationship. But I went up to, there's three of them. There's, just so you know, there's Bill Burns, who, of course, you're very familiar with, from UFO Magazine. Then they've got this taller gentleman who I found out the girls really like, who's their science guy. He's a scientist. And then they have this kind of, he represents the normal guy, and he actually got involved with this whole thing because he had a sighting and a video that he had taken of a UFO that Bill Burns was really interested in, and he lived nearby, and they'd become buddies. And then Pat had introduced this idea to Bill Burns' wife. They were talking on Nancy, and they decided to go for it. And it happened. But Pat, I went up to say hello to him, and he's like, Alejandro, he's like, I've heard your radio shows. I've downloaded some of your MP3s. And that was just, I'm still obviously excited about that. But that was really exciting.
That's so fantastic. Wow. I'm going to have to check out the show because all I've heard are good things about it.
Yeah.
Did you get to see I think there was only like one episode that they did on the Sci-Fi Channel called
I did get to see that, and I liked it. It was really good. It's too bad that show didn't go on, and I kept getting calls from the director the week that it was going on, and he's like, you know, I need help, who do I email? And I gave him lots of names to email. Unfortunately, you know, I don't know, the show really has to be interesting to people outside of ufology as well, because we don't have a large enough community to make a show last all by ourselves, so I don't know how much help we were, but he started emailing different groups, hey, you know, check out our show, we really want to represent this field, and but they was kind of too little too late at that time. They had only a pilot shot
when
UFO Hunters had a whole season.
Exactly. They only filmed one episode. It was almost as if they didn't expect it to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And I know the people who worked on the show wanted it to. It was
right.
As if the Sci-Fi Channel just never planned to do anything.
Well, they decided instead of being more conservative, which would have been better for the show, and shooting more episodes and kind of just having do their own thing, they decided to go head-to-head and turn it into this one-on-one battle with the History Channel show. And You know, the bigger kid on the block won. So it was unfortunate that they did that, and even the director was very upset that they did that, because he knew that was going head to head was not the way to do it. He would definitely rather have been more cooperative and had them compliment each other.
Yeah, I was really sorry to see that. I mean, it's too bad that the people involved in both shows couldn't be working together. You know, because I thought the people who I saw on the Sci-Fi Channel episode were really wonderful. I mean, I know a couple of them personally, so it was fun seeing that, you know, seeing friends of mine on TV. But they all seemed really sincere and really truly interested in finding out what was going on and helping that, oh my God, that one man who just like broke down on screen.
Yeah.
That was one of the most moving things I've ever seen. And I thought it was great that was on there, because while it was a little bit, it felt almost intrusive. I felt just slightly embarrassed, like, oh my God, you know, we're looking in this poor man's private life. But he was willing to put that out there, and it was so great for showing someone who's not familiar with the field and with the research that's going on that this is real. You know, nobody could watch that and not be affected by it.
Yeah. So it was a good show. It's unfortunate, and hopefully Sci-Fi will pick up another project. But right now, luckily, you know, we had ABC at the symposium, and they're going to do a documentary. It will be a good one. It's going to be a two-hour documentary, probably airing in September.
Oh, great.
And they did a lot of shooting there. History Channel was there to shoot some B-roll for the UFO Hunters, but also to do an online documentary that they're going to have. So that ought to be cool. They did a lot of shooting. And then Discovery Channel. I know. He wasn't there. Bummer. Oh, and he would have been.
So many people said to us at every place we went all spring, we went to like six conferences, just bing, 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 every other week. And people kept saying, oh, we'll see you at MUFON. We'll see you at MUFON. I had to keep saying, no, we're not going.
Yeah, what a bummer, because I was organizing that and the interviews, and I was certainly getting people involved with interviews that weren't necessarily speaking either, just people who were of interest in the field. But so ABC History Channel, and we had Discovery Channel, a production crew there also, and they are doing a show centered around MUFON.
Oh,
but,
fantastic. Wow.
Yeah, that'll be great. But we've also been working with three other production companies with Discovery Channel that are shooting different paranormal or UFO shows. And all of them have used, luckily, MUFON cases in some form or rather. So we're hedging our bets there.
Wow, it sounds like there are a lot of really exciting things coming up.
Yeah, so there are. Everybody's jumping in. Discovery Channel typically has not treated this field very well. But they seem very interested to do a serious show on UFOs. So that's great. I'm really excited to see what they come up with. And History Channel has always been... History Channel has been absolutely amazing when it comes to UFOs. I don't know if you've noticed, but the last couple of Christmases... All day long, Christmas Day, which used to be typically held for, you know, religious shows or history-type programs, has been UFOs.
Oh, no, I did not notice that, because my mother does not allow me to put the TV on Christmas Day. And you know what? I think she's absolutely right. But my dad is a huge fan of the History Channel, and frequently my parents will call us, or Rich's parents will call us, and tell us about something that's on, you know, that, oh, there's a really good UFO program on the History Channel right now. And I'm like, well, could you tape it? I can't turn it on. We don't have cable, so I don't know.
Their shows are great. History Channel does a great job.
They're always fantastic. And I do sometimes get hold of DVDs later, because I know the History Channel sells a lot of their DVDs, and our local library has some of them.
Well, and these days, Richard's on a lot of those programs.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, which is great.
As I just mentioned, we were at a lot of conferences in the spring and the early summer, and we're actually not going to be doing very much traveling through the rest of the summer and the fall because he's so close to getting his book done. And we're so excited. But he's really in the home stretch, and so he wants to kind of pull up and finish it. And then, of course, you know, I said something this morning, just today. We were having coffee first thing in the morning, and I said, oh, won't it feel good to have that done? And he's kind of rolled his eyes and said, yeah, then I have volume three to do. But, you know, but at least he'll have one done, right?
Yeah. Well, it's good he has things, ideas and things in the pipe, too, because that keeps things rolling and it keeps new stuff. It keeps things interesting. He's always got something new to present that way. But sometimes, unfortunately, of course, people ran out of steam. And I know that was one of the big pieces of conversation with a lot of, like, MUFON board and others, is that the age group, like I mentioned earlier, people are mostly in, you know, retired and in the upper ages, and you know, there's a lot of concern what's going to happen when these people are no longer able to produce and be very active, because there isn't a big base of younger people in the field.
Well, yeah, I know for a while Rich was one of the younger ones there, and of course we had Nick Redfern, who is, I don't know exactly what his age is, but I'm pretty sure he's younger than Rich.
It's hard to tell because he doesn't have hair, so we can't
tell. I know,
I
can't check
how much gray hair he has. Yeah.
I think he's several years younger than Rich and I. And of course John Greenwald is probably one of the youngest ones in the in the field right now.
Right.
But I'm wondering how many people, I mean, if one of the reasons why so many retirees are into this is because they don't have to worry about what their boss is going to think anymore.
Yeah, they don't have to worry about their colleagues, exactly, and I think that's a big reason.
You know, even when I was working in retail, when Rich was going to speak at a conference and I wanted to take the weekend off and go with him, you know, I'd have to ask for the weekend off, and I'd always have to put up with the eye-rolling and the jokes and... You know, it was always good-natured, and it was fine. I got along very well with the people I worked with, and I'd laugh with them, too. I can understand how it sounded.
Mm-hmm.
But we just had to go through this little ritual eye-rolling every single time I asked for it. And, you know, we traveled so much, it got pretty tedious pretty quickly.
Right.
So I wonder
if
people retire, they just kind of feel like, hey, my time is completely my own now. I don't have to answer to anybody. I'm going to find out what's out there.
Yep.
So.
Exactly, and I think that's why a lot. So hopefully, you know, we're always going to have retirees. So even if the field is full of retirees, hopefully we just get newer and newer people all the time as time goes on. And, of course, a lot of these people come from the professional areas, and they have a lot to offer. They have a lot of skills and a lot of abilities to offer the field, and the work gets greater and greater all the time. It gets better and better, more and more amazing discoveries. People say that they feel the field is kind of stagnant, and maybe it's that I'm new to the field since I've only been in it a decade, whereas others have been in it for much longer. For me, it's always new and exciting. So,
I think so, too, and I mean, every year, so many really great books come out, so that anyone who's thinking about getting into the field can really get a lot of training done on their own time, in private, because you don't have to tell your coworkers what you're reading.
Right.
You know, they can come into it when they're ready to start pursuing this, already knowing a lot about the history of, you know, what other people have already been researching and finding out.
Well, and these radio shows, too, because they can listen to these in private. And hopefully if people are listening now who, you know, are in their professional careers and don't want to jeopardize their relationships with coworkers or peers, you can start reading books right now so you can prepare yourself so you can help out and get more involved when you're retired.
Yeah. And that's true. Now, everybody has iPods, so, you know, we can all be putting this
listen
stuff on our iPods.
Show.
And if you just bob your head every once in a while, people think you're listening to music. So
yeah, dance a little
bit.
Fake
it out. You know, that's one of the things that George Norrie has really done. I mean, possibly Art Bell. I can't really speak about Art Bell that much because I never, I didn't listen to the show at the time when he was on it. I really got into Coast to Coast after George Norrie took it over. And one thing that's always impressed me about him is the way he talks about topics that, in general, do cause a lot of eye-rolling and a lot of snickering. But he's so matter-of-fact about them. He just acts like, well, yeah, everybody knows this exists, so what's the big deal? And it really encourages people to see these things as, what's the big deal? Let's look at it.
Yeah, and they're so popular, people love those shows. I know, you know, that's what, it was a big goal. I was really excited the first time I got to be on Coast. I thought, now I'm bona fide. I don't, you know, really care what happens from here on out.
Yeah.
That's
Isn't
as
that,
far as,
oh, wow,
you know.
Wow, that is so amazing.
That is
I've never
neat.
Been
and then,
on. I mean, I
Well, you
I
haven't?
Have, no, I've never
I'm
been
surprised.
On Coast. Well, I don't think I have enough to say, you know.
Yeah,
I ask
you.
Questions. I'm fortunate that, you know, I've had the honor of having George Norrie on my show.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think
cool.
it's amazing. But he was so gracious when I met him in Roswell last year in 07 for the 60th anniversary. I wanted to meet him. Rich was doing a taping on Coast to Coast from Roswell. And I said, well, let me just come along because I just want to say hello and just meet him face to face. And I shook his hand and I wanted to say, I have a radio show now and, you know, you're a real inspiration to me. And I got as far as saying, I have a radio show, and he said, oh, I'll be on it. And I said,
oh, wow.
Okay.
okay, great.
And I walked out like, oh, my God, George Norrie's going to be on my show. And I'd only had the show for a month at that time.
That
and I'd never done radio before. I didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, I said, oh, my God, you know when life hands you lemons, that whole thing?
Yeah.
I said, I think life just handed me the keys to a Mercedes. It was phenomenal.
It's great because I don't know of any other many other interviews he's done, and we were talking, I think during the break, I got to meet him for the first time just this last weekend at our MUFON symposium. He was out there, and I was mentioning what a great job he did on Larry King. You know, Larry King lately, you know, there's all these debates and it can get a little bit out of control. But he was so articulate, and he did such a great job mentioning some of the really important events that had happened recently. I think one of the things he had talked about was Walter Haught and his statement that had been released after his death about having seen entities when he was working at Roswell. And Walter Haught, for people who don't know, was the communications officer at the Army base in Roswell that had released the information,
and
his statements were incredible.
Isn't he related to someone who runs the UFO Museum in Roswell?
He's related to Julie Schuster, who
runs
the UFO Museum.
Okay.
It's her father.
Oh, okay. So,
yeah, he had mentioned in this affidavit about how he had actually seen the entities. He described them like others have, and having this reptilian type of skin. He also said that there was a second crash site, and the reason that they had released the information about the first crash site was to keep people in the dark about the second site, because the second one was more important, where the body of most of the craft, but also the bodies that were recovered, were at the second location, which... It's what a lot of researchers had come to the conclusions themselves of that. So it kind of confirmed it. But so that was a big piece of news. And I know there's at least another couple other big pieces of news that he was able to share on the Larry King show that I don't know if others would have introduced that were really important when he was on there. I think he was on there last year about this time. But I thought he did a great job. He does a great job with relaying information, and I'm sure he did a great job on your show.
It was wonderful talking with him. He is just, you know, he's so gracious, and he's just so easy to talk with. He was so relaxed and casual and friendly, and I actually got to meet him again at the X conference, at Steve Bassett's X conference in Gaithersburg, Maryland, last April. George Norrie came by, and I didn't even expect that I was going to have a chance to say hello to him. because he was just surrounded by fans the whole time, and I just kind of thought, well, you know, he's here, fine. I'd like to say hi, but I don't think I'll be able to get near him. And I was actually in the hotel bar late one evening, just getting ready to go to bed, and who walks in all by himself, no fans, no nothing, just George Norrie just strolls in. So I just went up and said hi, and I didn't even know if he'd even remember who I was, because, I mean, we had talked on the phone, but I'd met him face-to-face one time for like 5 minutes. And I walked up and said, you know, I just wanted to say hello, and he said, oh, yeah, you know, I had a great time being on your show, and tell Rich I said hi. And this was like, you know, from August to April. I couldn't believe, I was so surprised that he remembered at all who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just so down to earth and just seems like just a really friendly guy.
Yeah, certainly,
and
you
know,
not
you're
a
thinking,
lot of knowledge.
He runs this show. I mean, he could very easily be very arrogant,
mm-hmm.
but he's not. I wouldn't be surprised at all for him to just look at me like, you know, who are you with your little internet radio show? But
yeah, it's amazing the number of people that listen to the show, too, because it's like being on that show is almost an instant start of sort of stardom in
mm-hmm.
this arena. I mean, all of a sudden, all of these people know who you are, and they're so excited about it, and people treat you different even, and
it's kind of like being
incredible.
Made, isn't it?
It is. It's like being made.
Yeah.
And I remember because of Stephenville, you know, I was on there three times in a matter of a month or two, and it was just like, you know, Stephenville was real busy, and it was a whirlwind for a period of time. So there was no time to think. All you could do is take phone call after phone call after phone call, talking with the press. And once that died down after a few days, and I sat down, and as usual, let's go check and see what Coast is up to. And then going and seeing my name with three different shows on there, it was just like, holy crap, you know, it really hit me. Whoa, this is amazing. It's like after the first one, I thought, you know, I don't care if I get any more publicity in this arena. That's, you know, I was made, so I'm good.
Yeah.
So that show is really, I didn't realize how influential that show was and how many people listen of all walks of life. Even more so than a lot of the major news outlets. I wouldn't even be surprised if they have more listeners than Larry King has viewers.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised either because, what did they say, they have like 4 million or something? And that's people who listen live. And I mean, I don't know anybody who listens to it live. Everyone I know downloads it the day after and listens to it during the day.
I do know a fair amount of people who listen live, and I don't know how they do it.
Oh, God, I can't.
They're up all night.
One time, I was a really good wife, and I got up in the middle of the night when Rich got up, and he was doing his interview. And I listened to his segment, and I'm just like...
Mm-hmm.
You know what? That was my good wife thing for a really long time. I need to get some sleep. I mean, we have kids. I have to be awake during the day.
Yeah.
I don't know how Rich does it. He can just function on practically no sleep, but I'm not like that.
Yeah, that's the hard part. I'm not like that at all either, and that's the hard part on being on the show is you got to do it in the middle of the night. But not as bad as poor Nick Pope, who was talking about his recent Larry King appearance where he was doing it out of a studio in
he's
in the
England.
UK. Yeah, at 3 in the morning he's doing his interview.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, poor guy. He's a really neat guy, too, though.
Oh, Nick is wonderful. I got to chat with him at one of the X conferences, too. I was kidding around with him at his table, and I don't think he quite knew who I was, but... You know, he was friendly. And then later he realized I was Rich's wife, and was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I started kidding Dad.
Yeah. I'm not mad at you anymore.
Yeah. I was thinking, who is this strange woman?
Like, okay. He's a really nice guy. And the UK files, I think, are amazing right now. You know, we're all excited at MUFON right now because of this radar report where some of our researchers did some great work. They did some FOIA requests, got some radar information back from the FAA, and that radar information, we have a radar expert who is able to help out with it, shows unknown objects that were tracked that correlate with eight of the witnesses in the Dublin and Stephenville area.
Oh, wow.
So it's really cool. Anyone can go to MUFON.com and download this report. And we're really excited about it. It's some wonderful work. You can read the report, and they're very good at recording their thought processes and even recording where, okay, there may be, this may not show this or that, but here's what it correlates with, and this is why we felt it important enough to put it in the report. So they did a great job. But when you look at some of what's being released in Britain, they have some of, you know, lots of those files that are being released have radar data, and a lot of witnesses are police officers or control tower personnel. The files they're releasing out there are pretty incredible right now. That's something that people in the U.S. really have to take a closer look at, I think. And it was neat to have him at our symposium to talk about some of those files.
Now, this is a really exciting time to be living through because all these other countries are coming out with their files.
Yeah.
And in the first half of the show, we were talking a little bit about disclosure. And I wanted to ask you what MUFON's official position is on the whole disclosure concept. I mean, I know Steve Bassett talks all the time about that he really believes disclosure is imminent. And
mm-hmm.
he makes an excellent case for it. Do you know what is the official stance of the MUFON organization? I mean, does anyone there think it's about to happen or it is happening?
We actually have, we only have a couple official stances. And essentially that the phenomena is happening and that we believe it's of an extraterrestrial nature. And that's it. A lot of people are always asking similar questions. What's MUFON's stance on this? What's MUFON's stance on that? We don't have one. We really don't have any official stances. A lot of MUFON researchers have done a lot of work in many areas, and a lot of people will say, oh, MUFON has, you know, debunked the Billy Meyer the incident. So we don't believe in MUFON for that reason. Mm-hmm. And people don't realize that that's not the case. If you were to pull the MUFON members or investigators, you would find that, you know, MUFON's very split over a case like Billy Myers and many others, even though some researchers who are very well known who are part of MUFON may have done research in an area or another. That doesn't necessarily mean MUFON as a whole. You know, there's no one, well, actually, except for, you know, the board and maybe James and myself that speak for MUFON and whose research represents MUFON. So we don't have official stances on very much. And so even with the subject of disclosure, one thing that I find very interesting and kind of makes me feel the same way is that the researchers who have been in this field for decades don't feel disclosure is going to happen anytime soon.
Mm.
Even though a lot of us...
Friedman doesn't think so.
Right. Dan Friedman, John Schuessler feels the same way, and a lot of the others. Leo Sprinkle, who's a friend of mine who lives in the area. He lives in next door in Wyoming, but luckily I get to work with him and see him do talks. He feels the same way. Because they've been in this for so long, they have had periods of time where they thought it was right around the corner. John Schuessler says, you know what, disclosure, there was a time in the 70s where I thought it might happen, but it didn't. They've been through so much. And the last time I saw him talk, someone asked him about, well, what about these UN conversations that have been supposedly been going on? And, you know, John said, well, the UN conversations have been going on for quite some time. John himself has gone to the UN and been in some of these back office meetings where they wanted to ask him about UFOs. So the UN having meetings or some of the members being interested is nothing new. It sounds exciting because maybe we haven't heard of anything like that happening in the recent years, but it's nothing new. You know, it's to them, it's kind of like I've been there, done that, you know?
Yeah.
No big deal. It doesn't necessarily mean disclosure's right around the corner. So lots of people feel different. And then you have Bassett and some of the newer people. I'm kind of on the fence, but I used to feel more positive that, wow, it seems like disclosure's right around the corner. But then when I listen to these guys, who are definitely some of my mentors, maybe they're Mike. Maybe we got some time to go here.
Yeah, I can see you could really make a case either way. I listen to both of them, and, you know, when I listen to Steve Bassett, I feel like I'm convinced it's going to happen.
It's happening tomorrow.
He makes an excellent case. He's a very eloquent speaker, and he sounds like he really knows his stuff. And, yeah, I mean, when you listen to him talk, you feel like, how could it happen any other way? Because this guy has got his finger on the pulse, and he knows. But then I listen to other people talk, and I feel like, well, you know, this guy kind of sounds like he knows what he's talking about, too. And don't even ask Rich about it, because he'll tell you, yeah, it'll happen, but, you know, then civilization will collapse, and the banking industry will collapse, and then, you know, the government will collapse.
Yeah,
it'll happen, but it's not going to be fun. You're going to wish it hadn't happened.
I know, and I agree that we have some major things to talk about. Or to consider when we do talk about disclosure and whether it's going to happen or not. But I do feel, and not necessarily everybody feels, but, and this was my talk in Roswell, I do feel the media is opening up a little more. And even since I've been doing this position for MUFON, because my job mostly, actually, even though there are some educational items that I want to get to, most of my job is largely taken up by just working with the media. I've seen a shift just in the small period of time that I've been doing this. You know, it used to be things were really taken lighthearted. And the biggest change, the first change I saw was after Kucinich in November, or actually I think it was the last day of October, was asked about UFOs. The LA Times gave us a call. I talked to the writer who was really not into UFOs at all. She even was like, kind of thought it was funny that we had, you know, hit one if you've seen a UFO, hit two if you've been abducted, you know, hit three if you want to talk to media relations. And she kind of chuckled about that.
Well, it is
kind of
funny, actually.
Yeah, it is. And so she felt it was kind of funny she had to wait through that kind of IVR to get to us. But she had talked with us, and she also talked with another one of my favorite researchers, who Graham Cameron, the guy who did presidentialufo.com, Grant Cameron.
He has the greatest website. I love it.
Well, and what's incredible about him is you talk to him one-on-one, and he's got so much research he's done that isn't even on his website. He's such an incredible, very rigorous and careful researcher. It's amazing. But they had also gone to him, which was great. That's a perfect place to go for this subject. And the story she wrote was what we had told her. She didn't take it and spin it into something silly. She took it serious and had talked about, you know, Kucinich, and actually Stephen Bassett had had a run-in with his people just prior to that event, because Bassett had talked about Kucinich's sighting, but she went over about, you know, Reagan's possible sighting and Jimmy Carter, and she wrote a great story. So that was really hopeful. And then Stephenville happened. And that was amazing, because most of the press were treating it very well. It was amazing that it took off like it did. And we were talking to everybody. That's the first time I got to work with Geraldo's people. And every time, we've worked with them a couple of times, they're real interested and they want to do a show with our guys, but they end up not doing it, which is unfortunate. But hopefully, I'm sure one of these times we're going to get him and he'll do something. But, you know, they're calling. The Geraldo's people were the funniest, because they're like, should we send a camera crew or shouldn't we send a camera crew? I don't know, you know, and okay, well, I think
you
we'll send a
pictures?
Crew. I'm like, yeah, you want some videos? Definitely send the crew. And I felt that, you know, who am I to tell you to send a camera crew? And I'm like, yeah, you better send a crew. Yeah, you better go ahead and do that. Then they call back, Bill O'Reilly's people are sending a crew. You didn't tell me that. Well, I didn't know. Well, okay, well, we'll send our crew anyway. And then they call back, we're not going to send a crew. And then they're like, do you guys think you could take a video camera there and film for us and send it to us? So it's really funny how they just, you know, every second everything changes, just like with TV, that's how it works.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Everybody was treating everything really good, and I think one of the most amazing things that could have happened during Stephenville is that you had a lot of people, especially there was a CNN reporter, actually, no, he was Fox News, I'm sorry, I think, Bill Hemmer, and his co-host, News These Days, is a lot of times a couple good-looking people who flirt with each other a lot, so the flirty host, you know, the girl was asking him about UFOs and if he believes in UFOs, and during their flirt segment, he had said, yeah, I do, and she said, well, you're not alone, and she went over some poll. So that was really incredible to see him say that. But what was more incredible is the next morning on the Today Show, they had a story featuring MUFON and our investigators out there, and Matt Lauer and Al Roker, Anne Rice, asked them, do you guys believe in UFOs? They said yes. And they laughed. They're like, no, you don't. And Al Roker said, yes, yes, I do. And so did Matt Lauer, yes, I do. They asked, well, do you think they're being flown by aliens or ETs? And they're like, yeah, definitely, why not? It'd be silly not to believe there's life out there. I believe these things are coming here. And why wouldn't they be flying around looking at us? That's what we do. And they both agreed. Al Roker and Matt Lauer both agreed and were very, you know, matter of fact, yeah, I believe in aliens and UFOs. And I think that's a huge shift.
That is.
When the cool kids, you know, really, adults aren't much different than high school. And in high school, your student body presidents, everything, it was the popular cool kids. And once they do it, then everybody can do it. And really today, you know, especially the Today Show, these are the cool kids, you know.
Yeah.
These are the people that we try to emulate, as the professionals who are entertaining us every morning. And once they say it's okay, I think others feel it's okay. And I think that's a real big kind of cultural shift. And even though this isn't popular, especially for a MUFON person to be talking about Shirley MacLaine, Matt Lauer, just a month before, had done an interview with Shirley MacLaine, and you could tell he was just, like, you know, a little bit in awe. He was a big fan of hers. And she goes straight into all this UFO stuff and why it's real and why it's going on, and France is releasing its files, and goes into all of this stuff, and he was really interested in taking her serious. And personally, I think that interview had a lot to do with making that second piece happen on Stephenville, when Anne Rice had asked him about UFOs. And they were just very much, you can go read the transcript. You can even go to our MUFON YouTube site, and I've got it up there. But yeah, they had said, you know, we believe in UFOs. And that, a lot of people have the reaction you have, wow, you know, really?
I'm just amazed. I mean, we've seen so much
neat
giggling and eye-rolling and snickering behind the hand. And Alejandro, I cannot believe I have to say this, but we are out of time for tonight. We're
going
to have to do this again, because we're just getting going, and I was having way too much fun, and I can't believe how the time just flew.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming, Alejandro. I really, really enjoyed having you on the show tonight.
Great. Thanks for inviting me, and I had a lot of fun, too.
Great. Well, I will certainly be working out the schedule and ask you to come back on when you get a chance.
Perfect.
I just feel like there were so many things that came up while we were talking that I didn't get a chance to ask you about, so we'll have to do some more. And to all my listeners, thank you so much for joining us. This has been Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network and on UPRN 105.8 FM in New Orleans. Archives are available at ParanormalRadioNetwork.com and also on iTunes. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and I want to thank my guest, Alejandro Rojas of the Mutual UFO Network, again, for joining me this evening. Stay tuned for more great programming on P- PRN, Paranormal Radio Network. Thanks, everyone. See you next week.